This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodling? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Lawson Bram, skidabarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidabarinky-doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I've wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much, you, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Zero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, as is usual, for another edition of the only Place to Be podcast that's out there in existence today, that I'm aware of. Joining me as always, my PIC, I'm hoping he's not still sore from last week's tilt over Flanagan Court and his long-awaited debut, Mr. Scott Criscola. How are you?
Good evening, JR. I feel quite well. Thank you. Welcome, Place Be Nation, to episode 453 of the Gold Standard. And no, I feel great today. Physically, I was feeling winded, admittedly, but it was a fun game. I had a blast. It was nice to get back on the court. I think I did a few scrimmages back in the day in the pre-arsonist league days.
Yes,
but
it's like the original
first...
WCF, and that was in the basement before we got onto
yep.
the.
That's right. Yes, that's right. And we didn't have the wrong tape in when my entrance theme played.
No. Things got hot though. Yeah, I think it was. I was
not surprised. I was not surprised. I knew it was going to be at least one scrum. Yeah. I didn't realize we were literally one bucket away from avoiding it.
I know. We're close.
And then it happened
close.
Anyway.
Oh well. But we're here tonight to get back inside our vintage vault. It's been.
Yes, sir.
It feels like it's been a while. Has it just been a week or 2 weeks? When the hell's the last time we even recorded?
2 weeks.
Okay.
We're 2 weeks.
Okay. So, yeah, it's been a while, but we're back, and it's just us tonight because why?
Because tonight we are on TV, and usually when we're on the big – on the boob tube, on the small screen, it's usually just you and I. Just you and I. Speaking of, Yacht Rock starting this week. This
Wednesday.
Weekend? Thursday.
Wednesday.
Yes. Wednesday. Tomorrow. Oh, Wednesday. Yeah. Perfect.
21st. First day of summer. Yacht Rock. Of course, it always exists. It's on Channel 311 or on the app. But starting Wednesday for the summer, it will be on the regular channels. It'll be on 17 for, I think, a couple weeks. And then it moves down to 13 where it'll stay for the rest of the summer. So all you fans that may don't have access or put it away for the winter, it's back. And, of course, this is the summer of Yacht Rock here on the Place to Be podcast. So every episode going into break will be a different Yacht Rock song each week.
Yes. Yep. And, the number channel 17 right now is always the Love channel, and that's easily able to be replaced. And 13, I don't know what the fuck they're playing right now. Carolina Beach, so I don't even know what the hell. Every time I seem to stroll through it on the dial, it's like a different genre. So I don't know what beach songs in the Carolinas are, but it's like five different genres of music mushed into one. Very weird.
I'll have to ask Greeny. He lived down there for a while. He doesn't know.
I'll have to say all the different genres mushed into one channel. What's going on? One minute it's like some, you know, chicken picking song, and then it's some, you know, like Otis Redding, and then, I don't know, you know, Derek and the Dominoes. I don't know. It's kind of weird, but looking forward to Yacht Rock on the, because when you're in the car, a lot of some cars don't have the extra channels, the internet channels. Some cars do. I guess it depends on the dealer and the make or whatever. But anyway, that'll be coming up later this week. But tonight we're diving right in, JR. So let us go into this evening's show.
Okay.
It is Saturday night's main event. Main event. The date, May 3rd, 1986. Live, JR, from your office. I have a satellite office in New Haven. You have a satellite office here. Of course, we share our office at the Garden. And that is, of course, the Providence Civic Center in Providence, Rhode Island. No Dunkin' Donuts yet. Actually, probably a good, 15 years away from...
Yeah, I think it was mid-2000s-ish.
Yeah, so...
But yeah, still Providence Civic Center. So for a Saturday night's main event there, and a pretty famous one, as we'll say.
Yes. So, yeah, your announcers are, of course, Vincent Kennedy McMahon and Bobby the Brain Heenan, who's pinch hitting for Jesse this evening.
Yeah, I wonder where Jesse was. Maybe off in Hollywood, I guess, doing something. Or
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what movie came out in 86, but give us our numbers, JR.
Yes, Hulk Hogan, 829 days into his reign as world champion.
829 days.
It's only going to get longer. Randy Savage, our Intercontinental Champion, at 82 days. The British Bulldogs, 24 days since WrestleMania 2 when they won the tag team titles. And the Fabulous Moolah, buck 57 into her reign. And we have some dark matches tonight we can touch on briefly. Lanny Poffo defeated Rene Goulet, or Larry, as our friend Stephen put here. Iron Mike Sharp defeated SD Jones. Pedro Morales defeated Tiger Chung Lee. Danny Spivey knocked off Moondog Spot. And there was another show on this evening. Would you like to cover that? Would you like me to? How do you want to handle
it? I'll leave it to you, sir. I don't have the window open at the moment, but go right ahead. What else? Who else was going on? And of course, this was taped, I think, 2 days before. This is Saturday. I think this was taped on Thursday. But where was the real roster on this Saturday evening?
Well, actually, I think the one he gave me was from the night of, I don't know. He put March 1st, so I don't know what that means. But I don't know if he meant May 1st. I don't know if he meant
what some backwards
fucking thing. I have no clue. I don't know. Someday. Someday we'll get the numbers right and the spelling right. But for now, that man out there in the Twitterverse who represents us on social media, apparently, has the incorrect date.
Yeah.
This was recorded on May 1st, and the card he gave me was the same night it was recorded, and that is from the Salt Palace in Salt Lake City, Utah. King Tonga defeated Alexis Smirnoff. Bret Hart knocked off George Wells. Hercules beat Siviafi. Bob Orton Jr. knocked off Steve Gatorwolf, subbing for Hillbilly Jim. The Killer Bees beat the Dream Team by DQ, and Don Morocco beat George Steele, and Tito Santana beat Macho Man Randy Savage by disqualification. Right. There was a double shot on this day that this aired. Almost nearly the same card. Not really. Jim Brunzell beat Ron Shaw. King Tonga beat and Big John Studd went to double count out. Bret Hart beat Brian Blair. Jimmy Hart and Jimmy Jack Funk and Dory Funk beat Junkyard Dog, George Steele, and the Haiti Kid. Adrian Adonis beat Hillbilly Jim. Scott McGee beat Moondog Spot, and Tito beat Savage by DQ again. And then on that same day, there was a show in Columbus, Ohio. It just featured the British Bulldogs. That's all it says here.
Yes, so. I just pulled it up when you started. So, yep. So in Columbus, Ohio is where our champions were. Mm-hmm. So Hogan got the night off and didn't have to wrestle any.
I was wondering if Jesse was going to pop up. Maybe it was in that Columbus, Ohio show. But maybe
I know, yeah. And then I believe a couple days later on that Monday the 5th, which they did back in the day, that was the Brantford, Ontario TV taping. So, all right, why don't we hop in? Because I got to admit, JR. I mean, I've watched this like you. Mm-hmm. I've watched this show a zillion times, and it's always a fun little sprint. It goes faster than you think. So why don't we dive in? Do we have some opening? Do we have any opening interview? I know they do like a montage at the beginning before the credits.
Yeah, so we do. Then, we open with the promos, narration by Gene, Vince joined by Bobby. Gene chats with the Funks and Jimmy Hart in a chaotic locker room, and we check out footage from WrestleMania 2. Gene notes that the Haiti Kid will be in Hulk Hogan and Junkyard Dog's corner tonight, and he has a surprise. Jimmy Hart says he has a surprise to handle Haiti Kid, and that is Jimmy Jack Funk, the newest Funk in the mix here. Gene then talks to Hulk Hogan, Junkyard Dog, and Haiti Kid in the aisle. Hogan says Kid is their answer for Jimmy Hart, and Haiti says he doesn't trust anyone that wears red underwear. Hulk says Kid has more heart than heart to offset the size. JYD says he always takes a bite, even with the lapdog behind him, while pointing at the Kid. Hulk calls them buck washers, whatever that is, and says they're all just jealous. So there you go.
I had to double check that. I thought he said butt washers, but...
What is a buck washer? Do you have any idea?
A buck washer? I have no idea what a buck washer is. I'll have to look that up as you're giving your
It looks like
analysis.
It's literally hang on, buck
washing
washer. Well, oh, buck washer was actually an American professional baseball pitcher. Played for the Phillies. Buck washer. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what a buck washer is.
Okay, Hogan.
Maybe that's what he's talking about. This is the pitcher, buck washer.
Must be as good as that famous American pitcher that no one ever heard of. All right, do some more rails, will you? Yeah. All right.
Maybe means a cheap dollar store washing machine. I don't know. I have no idea what the fuck he means.
I don't know. No idea.
Well, I mean, what? Yeah, I don't know.
No clue.
It's a hell of an insult, though.
I know.
Armento looks like a buck washer.
Is buck washer is the manager of either of these teams?
Right? I know. What the fuck is that? Anyway, we'll put him on the list of the top 130 WWE wrestlers of all time. Buck washer. Farewell match.
Let Sorrows do that pod blast.
Yes. Pod blast the buck washer. Hulk Hogan and Junkyard Dog taking on these Funk brothers. We saw them at WrestleMania 2, of course. But this is the farewell, Scott, for Terry Funk. Speaking of our WWE 100. Gone for 12 years during his time away. Of course, I'll go back to the NWA, into WCW. We become a slightly extreme in the King of the Deathmatch Tournament in Japan, head over to ECW, and of course will make his way back eventually. Dory Funk remains at ODF for a little bit and would team with Jimmy Jack Funk, billed as his brother, and of course he had the S&M mask on, but he, he's pretty much as a dollar store. He's a buck washer replacement for Terry Funk because nothing special going on. Of course, that was portrayed by Jesse Barr. Do you know what Jesse Barr's real first name is?
Jesse? No.
Farron. Farron Barr.
Judas. No.
Farron.
What is it?
F-E-R-R-I-N. Farron Barr.
Farron. Where the fuck did Jesse come from? It's weird.
Well, would you keep the fucking name Farron?
Maybe it's Irish?
I don't know. I wouldn't keep that name if that was my name.
I know. He's had that for a while, though, because I've been watching the 1982 Mid-Souths on the network, and he was a jobber there, and he was Jesse then, so... Must have been pretty early on he decided Farron was not a marketable wrestling name in 1982 or whatever. So
he's the son, of course, of Sandy Barr, the legendary promoter, and brother of Art Barr, who, of course, infamous for his tag team with Eddie Guerrero, amongst other things, a great wrestler. He would top villain in Florida in the mid-80s, winning the NWA Florida heavyweight title from our boy Scott McGee, lost his title to Brian Blair, joined the WWF in 1986 as Jimmy Jack Funk, the unstable younger brother of Hoss and Terry. And then in addition to his mask, he wore the noose around his neck. He would keep that gimmick for a while. Dory would eventually leave, and he'd pretty much be the only remaining Funk brother, in quotes, in the WWF, and became a pretty aimless jobber to the stars pretty quickly. And then he would end up leaving. And let's see, when did he leave? He went to Continental, went to World Class, and bounced around from there. Retired in 1997. And it looks like he's still alive anyway, so there you go. Jimmy Jack.
Jimmy Jack? Oh, yes, Jimmy Jack.
He remained in the... So he's pretty much the jobber of the stars role until June of 87. Has a backstage incident with Haku and gets shit-canned. And I believe he's the one...
Yeah, that was the least of his problems. He's having a backstage thing with Haku. You're lucky you only got fired and you weren't, picking teeth out of the ground.
He was the one, too, that caused the problem with the Rockers, right? Didn't he get them drunk or whatever?
Yeah, he told
them
to get shit-faced, right. Yeah. He told them to get drunk and they got fired. Yeah, that was him.
So, and then he got fired right afterwards, it seems. So anyway, there you go. Jimmy Jack Funk, pretty worthless overall.
So it's official. I found three websites, and I don't believe buck washer is even a word.
No, I don't think so either. It doesn't look like it.
Nice job, Hogan.
He must have been cheap or something. That's all I could think of. It maybe means like he washes dollar bills out, cleaves and clean. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, it sounds more like a poor name than anything else. But
I have no idea.
All right, so with the match, and then we can talk about the end of Terry's run here. Mm-hmm. So, never-ending JYD, Funk and Hart feud. Keep rolls. I mean, it's pretty much been Funk's entire run has been feuding with JYD. Like, he's done other stuff, but he's pretty much been married together since Funk arrived in 85. Hogan's awaiting his new top challenger. Bundy's been dispatched to Mania, so this is just kind of filling some time. We get a massive pop for Hogan, JYD, and Haiti Kid, as always. They feel like conquering war heroes when they march to the ring. Hogan has a chain wrapped around him, as well as in a cool touch, I thought. JYD mows through the Funks with slam after slam as Hogan crawls around and pelts him with headbutts. Kid yanks Jimmy to the floor off the apron and escapes under the ring. Heenan says Kid is like a cocker spaniel with a flea collar on his head and doesn't belong at ringside or in wrestling at all. Heenan is like on fire throughout this whole thing. Things settle down and reset as JYD and Haas tussle with Dog slamming him and sending him outside to regroup. Haas comes in and tags Terry, who takes his time before locking up with the Dog. Heenan again is all fired up, landing jabs left and right with a lot of anger. Terry misses a charge and runs shoulder first into the post and flies to the floor. Terry goes after Kid, who Bobby calls a dirty little midget, but Kid escapes again. JYD beats on Terry in the ring and tags in Hulk to a pop. Haas tags in again and ends up stooging around with Terry as Hulk then takes them both down and drops an elbow on Haas for two. JYD tags back in and clotheslines Haas as Bobby calls him illiterate and says his parents had only 9 months and only came up with the name Junkyard for a name. Terry tags in and lays in some elbows as Bobby says Kid can do 250 setups under a Chevy, which is a world record. The Funks double-team JYD and Beta and Hogan, allowing more double-team offense. JYD makes a comeback and Terry tags in Haas, who misses a charge in the corner. Hulk comes in and shoots Terry hard into Haas in the corner, sending them scurrying. Haiti gets on the apron, and Jimmy comes over and nails him with the branding iron. Hogan chases Hart around ringside as Heenan yucks it up, saying Kid was harpooned. JYD carries Kid to the back as we take a break. When we return, Hogan is working over Haas, slamming him and slugging Terry onto the timekeeper table. JYD returns to the corner as Hogan's controlling the action, getting a two on a suplex. JYD comes in and whacks Haas with a headbutt as Terry comes in and clobbers Hulk from behind. Haas pitches Hulk to the floor, where Terry bashes him in the ribs with the branding iron and kicks away. Terry drags Hogan down the aisle and slings him to the barricade, but Dog makes a save, as Heenan says Terry was taking him to Midget City with Kid. Hogan backdrops Terry on the floor and heads back inside and batters Haas before tagging in the Dog. Kid returns as Heenan asks if that's definitely him, because they all look alike. JYD eats a boot on a charge, and Haas tags in Terry, who stomps away. The crowd rallies JYD. Dog bows up, leading to a double clothesline. Terry stops JYD from tagging, slams him, and heads up top, but whiffs on a splash. JYD tags Hogan to a massive pop and cleans house, dropping the leg on Terry to get the win to bring an end, hopefully, to this feud. Oh, definitely to this feud. Haas and Terry dump JYD and Hulk, and then Jimmy works over Haiti, but Hulk makes a save before they can brand him. A red hot match, I thought, Scott. Non-stop action. Super fun brawling between all the top acts. Lots to like here, too. Everyone looks strong thanks to the frenetic pace. Bobby was awesome, too, just unloading the whole time. And the Bobby we all remember and love was much more measured. Like, this Bobby is just going at, like, 100 miles an hour. Just angry jokes left and right. Like, not the kind of cool, like, shticky Bobby from later. This is, like, angry heel Bobby. Tremendous opener. Good work that revved the crowd up into a frenzy. I went 3 stars on this. Let's talk about the match, and then we'll talk about Funk.
I gave it a 2.5. It was a good match. I thought it was solid. You had 4 expert workers in there, who, you know, got the crowd going, and there was no problems there. I love watching Jay. Even at this point when he was probably well past and not even the number 2 baby face anymore, I still love watching JYD in the ring, and I love watching him and Hogan together, because combined they still bring, you know, a lot of juice to the ring. So yes, I got a sure kick do. Out of that. What's that?
So they sure do bring a lot of juice.
Well,
to the ring.
Well, that's true too. They bring a lot of buck washing to the ring. But it was fun. It was a good sprint. I wanted to give it 3 stars. It just fell a little short for me, but still an exceptional TV match. As for the Funks, I mean, you knew that Terry couldn't really last much longer if he was not going to be at the top of the card. Funk is too dynamic. Terry, anyway, is way too dynamic a personality to be in the middle of the show. That's just the way.
Yeah,
Funk
but what
is.
If they did the tag stuff against the Bulldogs? Like, I think that could have been pretty good. I mean,
I think it would have been great.
The tag stuff was presented as main events very often, as we've seen in a lot of house shows. Like, tag matches do we have as closers? So, I mean, he could have maybe stuck around a little bit longer. I'm not surprised he left, but I think there was more for him to do. Like, you know, how about a feud with Tito? Like, that could have been really good and toward the top of the card. I mean, there are other guys he hasn't really fought, seriously, because he's been married as a Junkyard Dog, and not in a bad way. I mean, their feud has been fun, but he's had one-off matches with other guys, but his main program has been with JYD and then the blip with Hogan there in between. I think he's had a great run. I think he's an interesting case when we do the greatest WWE wrestler ever for the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a short run, but it's all really high. I mean, I feel like every match we've had of his has been like 3 stars or higher, at least.
Right.
He's had some really inspired work. He's been a force. The pacing is crazy that he works at. He brings this manic energy to the ringside area that's like off the charts. Every match is just this crazy, crazy you know, scene. You know, it's like just everything's wild. Right. And then, you know, we'll talk about his return at some point. But I think he's an interesting case. But I really enjoyed watching his stuff. I'm kind of sad he's already leaving. I'm sad, too, he's leaving, like, so quickly after Dory comes in. It feels like they brought him in to work this tag stuff, and then Terry bolts, and then sticks poor Dory with, you know, friggin' Jimmy Jack for a while. And Dory finally takes off. But it's, it's been a good run. I'm sad to see it end before we get to see more of the Funks do some more tag stuff.
Well, here's the thing. The problem with having Terry Funk, 1986 Terry Funk in 1986 WWF, is that if you're going to – I mean, I know that this is weird to say based on a lot of the promos that we've heard in our run here on top of, the culture of the WWF at that time. But unfortunately, if you feud with a guy like Tito – I don't know if Funk could be held back for any of the Mexican slurs that he's probably going to put forth. And, you know, Funk is just a tough guy to have in 1986 WWF because Vince, kind of like what he would do with Sid 9 years later, Funk is a certain guy that you kind of got to let loose. And unfortunately, Vince, through the years of the Federation era, only gave his heels so much rope. And the problem is Funk is one of those guys that has to take it to the next level. Even 1986 Funk, a lot of people think he didn't really snap until the late 80s, you know, even the early 90s, ECW. But even in the 80s, I mean, you and I were watching stuff Memphis 81 when he was feuding with Lawler that he was a whack job. I think the problem was ultimately I don't think there would have been enough rope for Funk to really be a good, effective heel. Now, I agree with you about the tag feud. I think him and him and Dory or him and Haas having legit matches with the Bulldogs, and I think they would have been great matches. But unfortunately, I just think Funk would have not had enough liberty to be the real Terry Funk, and I think he was better off going to Crockett or to a Southern
territory. What is the real Terry Funk, though? I feel like you don't feel like he's been the real Terry Funk?
I think he's been the real Terry Funk in the ring. And I think his promos have been – I mean, I don't think he's been a shell of his former self. But if you want him to be in these single feuds with guys, like, you know, Hogan, you can only go so far. And JYD, I mean, without really, really pushing the envelope. But if he's going to face a lot of ethnic stars like Tito and Steamboat and these kind of guys, he's going to have to – he might have to push an envelope that Vince may not have been entirely comfortable pushing.
I don't know. Look at the stuff they're rolling out there and the stuff they're saying on commentary. I mean, we're not that far removed from – you know, whatever, Tony Ellis getting called a spider monkey on TNT. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Terry would have gone very far, honestly. I don't know. I think he's been Terry Funk. I don't think they've reined him in at all. And I think he would have been fine. I just think it's in his nature to bounce around, and that's why he left.
Hey, I agree. And I'm not – yeah. No, I agree, and I'm not upset about it. I'm upset that he left. I'm just trying to justify the reasoning why he did. Otherwise, he should have stayed. I think he could have been pretty good even going into 87 and – I mean, Funk in some kind of feud at WrestleMania 3 when we get there would be pretty awesome. So it's sad because he was an integral part of this run, and he's, you know, obviously they did think a lot of him because, as you've said, as we've said, he, you know, his two major feuds were with the two top baby faces in the company. So it's not nothing to sneeze at, but it's kind of a bummer. I want to mention Bobby real quick. The Bobby that you see now, and I had said this when we were going through 85. And even when we were doing the network adventure and we were talking about the TNTs, when Bobby first comes in 84, you know, he's a different Bobby than the Bobby that we all remember, 88, 89, 90, et cetera. And you even see it here. He's still the legit heel manager. You know, he's not like the, you know, he doesn't hit. It's about this time that he starts co-hosting primetime with Gorilla. So. And he's even not funny there. Like, him and Gorilla snipe at each other, but it's much more deliberate and serious than it would be in 88, 89. So I wasn't surprised. It was a little different than the Bobby we'd be used to, but I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how the heels all get in Vince's face that, you know, you clearly root for – I mean, obviously they're rooting for the bad guys, but the way that he's, you know, they're giving Vince grief because he only roots for the good guys kind of thing. It was a good dynamic. It was different. Different than Jesse, although Jesse gets pretty frustrated at times too. But that was a Bobby that we'd have to get accustomed to, at least for the next year. I think we get used to this Bobby. I think we'll have this Bobby for at least the next 18 months
No, it was good. I mean, he was definitely more biting and quick. It was quick hitting and just this like sense of urgency in his voice that everything he said. Not as cooled down. You know, we could have Funk Brothers versus like Andre and someone could have been fun too. You know, having them stooge around for Andre and bump around. Yeah. So anyway, just kind of missed opportunities, but we'll see it again someday.
No, there's no doubt. And I think Funk would have been fun in an Andre feud, trying to do like almost angry but angry comedy stooging and a lot of, you know, pratfall tricks and that kind of thing would have made for some pretty good TV. But all right, so we have some interviews leading up to our next match, which is one that you've been more than anticipating for a very long time. I know you're going to enjoy these next few minutes thoroughly, aren't you?
Uncle Homer sent that Connecticut ice cream trail I saw on your Facebook page today. Battle of Big Men, who had recorded the two fastest recorded matches in WWF history. King Kong Bundy's record was recorded at WrestleMania 1 with a 9-second win over SD Jones, which, of course, is really 24 seconds. 7 months later, Uncle Elmer beat that record with a win over Jerry Valiant back at the second Saturday's main event in 6 seconds, which was actually 12. So we'll see what happens here as these two behemoths clash. And, of course, this would be the farewell for Uncle Elmer. As his last televised match, he'd wrestle at the company till the end of May, would continue to wrestle in Memphis in the CWA before retiring from the ring in 1990 and passed away due to kidney failure from diabetes. Not a shock on July 1st, 1992, at the age of 54. So we do go backstage for the big weigh-in between Bundy and Elmer. Bundy checks in at 468. Elmer waddles in eating his fried pig parts out of a giant bucket, like the fucking sloppy hog that he is. Elmer tips the scales at 430, which seems like bullshit to me. I mean, I don't know. He looked like bigger than Bundy to me, especially with his height. Heenan makes fun of him, and then we head to the ring. Did you think that was a fake weight on Elmer?
435? Absolutely. He's bigger than fucking Bundy. He should have been like 555 or something.
Right.
It was ridiculous. He's taller than him. He was definitely bigger than Bundy. 435 is a terrible weight. It was such a lie.
635, I can believe.
635 I might buy, but...
All right, so time for the Battle of the Big Boys. What a dip wait, for...
Before you go any further, how ridiculously cheesy was the fucking snorting noises when he's...
Oh, and that big bucket of fucking pig parts, like this giant comical bucket. I mean, it was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
He's already, like, we already believe that he's a big fucking slob. Like, we don't need that the giant bucket of pig to get it over. Like, just a bucket of KFC would have worked fine, or fucking Big Mac or something.
Terrible.
He could have eaten a whole fucking live pig. I would have bought it, but I don't know. He's the worst. Such a dick. I'm surprised he didn't like do his little floofy fairy hand signals as he's getting on the scale. Only fairies get on scales. So anyway, time for the Battle of Big Boys. What a dip for Bundy after Mania on MSG, slumming it with this slob. Heenan says he's an illiterate hillbilly lipid as Vince gets fired up for Elmer's arrival. Heenan also says Bundy's an athlete and the only man to put Hulk Hogan in the hospital. Vince chastises Bobby for staying in the booth instead of going to ringside. We get a few big collisions in the ring with neither man budging. Bundy eventually busts Elmer to his knees and kicks away at the ribs and then punches and chokes. Bobby calls Elmer a sow and mocks how poor he is. Elmer punches back into it and rams his fat ass into Bundy in the corner. Elmer whips Bundy to the corner and splashes him but misses a second one and collapses to the mat. Bundy drops an elbow to get the win, and of course, like the fat prick and piece of shit he is, Elmer nearly kicks out at the three count. Nothing match. I will say it was a bit of a spectacle. You know, I thought they built it up nicely. I'm always happy to see Elmer get squashed like a scrub. Heenan jokes that this wasn't even a good warm-up match for Bundy, and we'll say see ya to Elmer. Will not be missed. I've enjoyed this trip quite a bit, Scott. I have not enjoyed watching that scrub every month. I can see, I mean, the Hillbillies were over, I guess, for a stretch there. Hillbilly Jim broke his leg, kind of killing their momentum. I didn't mind Hillbilly. The rest of them I could take or leave. Elmer can go fuck. I'm glad he's gone. I don't want to watch him anymore. I'm done. Done wasting the hours of my life on Uncle Elmer.
But what about the strong rumors he was going to come back as, worthless. You know, Congorilla? Plowboy Frazier? I'm looking at I know we went through this list back in a previous episode, but I think some of these have been added. I don't remember Kamala too. the convict? What the hell was he, the convict?
Ugh, probably when he stole those fucking bucket of KFC from
fucking bucket of chitlins. What the hell's in there? Come on, the country plowboy? Lieutenant Frazier? This is dreadful.
He's so
Bundy. Ugh. Poor Bundy. At least he won.
Ugh.
Had he lost this match, I'd have fucking gone bonkers. Had he lost this match. But that's okay for Bundy, you know, kind of reboot him a little bit. I mean, he's still a viable heel. He's still very, very valuable as a big powerhouse. So he lost to Hogan. It's not a, you know, it's not a, it's a badge of honor, I guess. You were in the main event of the year.
I mean, the fact that he squashes him here made me feel better. Like, it feels like a drop off. We saw he was still in the main event picture at MSG, but then he comes in here. But again, it was really just to write Elmer off and have him kill him in 2 minutes. So it made me feel better. Then on paper, it looks like a real demotion, but when you break it down and watch the match, it's better for Bunny than you would think.
Right, exactly. Unless he was wrestling Tex Frazier, and then there'd be a big lot of problems. Hillbilly Elmer. Why don't they just call him Hillbilly Elmer? Like, or Hillbilly Jim's brother, Hillbilly Elmer. Pascagoula Plowboy. Anyway, enough talking about him. Disgusting fat shit. Good win for Bundy. Not much more to say. The match is trash. I gave it a dud. Just, it's gone. Move on. I'm sure we're going to have to deal with, and we're not done with all of them, because I'm sure we're going to have to deal with some Cousin Luke and fucking Junior trash.
Junior's gone, right? So is it just, I mean, Hillbilly Jim I have not minded. I'm okay with Hillbilly Jim.
Hillbilly Jim's fine.
I don't know if Luke is still around or not. I mean, Junior left a while ago. Luke replaced him, right? So he's gone, and now Elmer's gone. So hopefully Luke is done too, and we just can enjoy Hillbilly Jim and be done with it.
Exactly.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Awful.
So from that,
I hope Glenn Butler just smash whatever is listening to this song.
Plowboy pig parts. We now move on to another match with a large guy, but still,
this guy's not annoying though. So
20 times more awesome. So what do we got?
We go backstage to the locker room. Gene is with Adrian Adonis and Jimmy Hart, who are singing about their match tonight. They also have a cardboard cutout of Paul Orndorff, his opponent. They talk to it and preen over it, and Gene says this is a dressing room, not a locker room, whatever the fuck that means. Adonis does his usual promo and says he'll put a crack in Orndorff's head. Actually, this is a really good promo. I thought it put over Adonis's gimmick. I thought he was a nice alternate between, you know, this whatever gimmick he has going on, and between the adorable one and between, like, still being kind of a badass. Like, I thought it was a nice dichotomy he worked into the promo. So I like this a lot. I liked him hanging on the Orndorff cutout. The smug Orndorff look on the cutout was pretty funny too. But I enjoyed this. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I did too. He's just a great promo guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knows how to, whatever this he's dealing with, whatever this, character he's settling into, and we get more annoying insults in the match, which we'll get to, but this promo was very good. Top line.
It was nice hearing
Jimmy Hart right now.
No, he's good. I mean, he's got an interesting mix of guys. Like, I mean, it sucks that he's losing Terry, but he's got the Hart Foundations on the come up, and you got Adonis is hot. So no, I think it's been good.
Yeah. Like we said, the manager's going stages, and right now this is. I feel like Jimmy has been positioned even higher than Bobby as like the top manager. So.
Right now.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
Bobby just had a guy in the main event at WrestleMania.
Let me backtrack that. The managers, I said this, we've talked about this before, about how the managers
have different. You've been wrong about it before, but go ahead.
Well, no, I wasn't wrong about it. I'm backtracking. I'm admitting that. Let me finish it, and then we can move on. The managers, each manager wrestles or manages a different style of guy. Jimmy Hart kind of has the serious but quirky misfits. Bobby has like the hoi polloi, kind of high level heels. Johnny V's got the kind of the weird alternative, you know, nut jobs, except for Valentine. And then Fuji's got the, you know, strange, you know, mystical Far East guys and Morocco. So, like, when Jimmy had Bundy, it didn't quite fit. Bundy fit better with Bobby. And, like, Adonis, we had that stretch where Adonis was with Bobby, you're like, and now he's with Jimmy, and you're like, all right, this fits better. So I feel like at this time, the managers all had their style of guy.
Yeah, for sure.
In their group. So
yeah, but I think Bobby was still the ace. I mean, his guy just made event to Mania, and
he's
going after Hogan more often. I mean, we had the funk stuff, I guess, with Jimmy. So, I mean, Jimmy's like 1B. He's up there. Yeah. But no, he's good. He's good. And it was also nice to hear someone other than my son say, I'm going to crack your head open. So that was nice.
That would be nice.
All right. So Orndorff versus Adonis. Orndorff heads out first, gets a big pop. Vince puts over his training. Oh, by the way, we have to go back to earlier today. Orndorff and Mean Gene were in a sauna talking about tonight's bout. Orndorff compares Adonis to Fabulous Moolah. says he's never wrestled anyone that's the loafers, and he says he's facing a blimp and a wimp. So there you go. More political correctness from Paul Orndorff, as always.
Yep.
So Vince puts over his training regiment. Adonis comes out wearing a dress and stockings with his usual heat. Orndorff dominates with arm drags and slams until Adonis flops to the floor to regroup. Orndorff comes to the apron, stomps on Adrian's hand, and then shoots him into the corner, and Adonis flips upside down and falls to the floor. Vince says Adonis was upside down just like he is in real life. Adonis slowly comes back, but is clearly in pain. Vince mocks Adonis' ring attire, but Bobby says it's his preference, and it may be a long t-shirt, not a dress. Adonis lands a kick, but Orndorff comes back with an abdominal stretch, as Heenan says it could be a shower curtain that he's wearing. Orndorff breaks the hold, but charges hard to the corner and gets tied up with the ref and popped in the face. Adonis hammers away and chucks Paul across the ring, but Paul ducks a charge and flips Adonis over the top to the floor. Orndorff grabs hold of Jimmy and drags him to the ring and hoists him up and throws him into Adonis. After a break, Orndorff is still in control, hoisting Adonis onto his shoulders and twisting him into an airplane spin. Adonis hooks the rope to break the hold, and they tumble to the floor. Adonis gets rammed into the post, but Orndorff ends up chasing Jimmy into the ring. As the ref breaks them up, Adonis comes in and bops Orndorff with the megaphone. The crowd unleashes an unsavory chant as Adonis preens and lays in strikes. Heenan says Vince is jealous of Adrian. Orndorff dodges a knee drop, but Adonis comes back with a punch and a scoop slam, and then drives a falling elbow into the head for one. Adonis takes Orndorff over with a suplex for one, and then heads up top, but catches Paul's knees on a splash. Vince says he took the knees to the bulbous midsection of the ugly Adrian Adonis. Orndorff kicks away at Adonis, who's tangled in the ropes, and then slugs Jimmy to the floor. Orndorff levels Adonis with a dropkick, sending him careening into the post, and then rips his dress apart and chokes him with it. Vince says Orndorff is in a rage, and Bobby says he's lost it. Orndorff throws the referee down for DQ, but keeps grinding on Adonis and choking him out. Jimmy tells him to break free, and Adonis, I don't know if this is like a work or real. Did you hear him? And he's like, I can't breathe. And then like Orndorff kind of lets go. Like I couldn't tell if he was saying it to Jimmy as like a character thing or if he really couldn't breathe, because he kind of like says it like straight lace. He's just like, Jimmy's like yelling at him. He's like, I can't breathe. It was really weird.
Yeah. It was weird.
I don't know if that was legit or not. So he finally breaks free and flops to the floor. And Vince, just like is in full-on bully mode, goes, look at that fat, as he falls to the floor.
Yeah.
Interesting and wild match. All sorts of big bumps and frantic pacing. Orndorff is just a wild animal out there, and the crowd is all over Adrian. Vince was pretty fun, too, even though he was mean and most of the time. He was fun at the parts where he wasn't fat-shaming Adonis. Adonis was a bump machine, a good win for him to keep rolling. Adonis was out of control from the bell, so him snapping and chucking the ref, I thought, fit the flow of the bout. I went 2 stars on this. It was a great brawl. It was hard hitting. It was fast, and Orndorff just was manic from the opening bell to the end. Just never stopped. So I didn't mind the finish, and I continue to really enjoy Adonis whenever I see him.
Yeah, I gave this 2 stars as well. Obviously, two of our favorites. But this is an interesting match because as I'm watching it, I'm thinking to myself, here's two guys going along the same trajectory creatively in 1986. One is a babyface, one is a heel. Who gets the tip? Like, who ends up getting the win? Who gets the extra, gets the extra, nudge at the end of this match? Orndorff the babyface or Adonis the heel? Adonis had a win at WrestleMania 2. Of course, it was against, fucking Pig Parts Boy. And then you had Orndorff losing that disgusting opener or winning that terrible opener to Morocco. So the question is, who would this match have helped win or lose? And did they kind of punk out the ending by having somebody win by count out? Did this kind of hurt Orndorff?
No, definitely not. No, I don't think so. I don't take any finish on Saturday's main event seriously. Like I've learned that watching these now a few times through. This is purely meant to like drive angles for the houses or whatever else to keep things brewing and really is introductory stuff for newer fans that may be tuning in on NBC. Like Saturday's main event at this point is not a place for like blow off matches, and I am fine with that. So no, I didn't think this was bad at all. I really dug it, and I thought they did it well. It wasn't just Orndorff like getting DQ'd for no reason. He was a fucking maniac from the minute the bell rang. He was pissed off and went crazy. And he, you know, he keeps that rolling right into the end of the match. So I have no issue at all with the way this went.
Mm.
I do wish they did this maybe at Mania. You know, we talked about how these guys were wasted at Mania. Like, this could have been a great match, like a great 5-minute brawl. I mean, how long was this compared to the shit they did?
Yeah, I mean, this match was...
what? 12 minutes.
12 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, Orndorff in Morocco was what, like 4, I think, or 5? And then that Elmer fucking mess was probably 3. So, might as well just put those two together and give these guys a match and, I don't know, put Morocco in the Battle Royal or something? I don't know.
Right. You could have done something like that. But yeah, 12 minutes. And this whole thing had started. So Adonis had been mocking Orndorff, saying he was this Hulk Hogan sidekick and calling him Hulk Jr. So that would obviously will come into play eventually. We'll get to that. But it's interesting.
Yes. No, it is. And a great and a good match, a good solid TV match. There was going to be no doubt about that. And I mean, Adonis is awesome. And he ends up having one of the better years of anybody in 1986, better than people think when you think about it. So we're 3 out of 5 matches in. Why don't we take a break? Pretty fun show so far. No, not too bad.
Oh yeah, I'm
better than
sure.
So when we come back, we'll have 2 matches left, or will it be just 1 match? We don't know. And some we have a kind of an in-depth we have another Hogan segment. We're not done with our world champion yet on this evening as well. So we'll be back with more from May 3rd, 1986 from Providence. But first, many words. Not from Providence, because...
fat fucking slob.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
All right, Nation, we are back here talking Saturday's Main Event from May 3rd, 1986. We've seen a lot of addiction here tonight, Scott. You know, we've seen the Funks addicted to mayhem. We've seen Uncle Elmer addicted to high-calorie meals. You could even say Adrian Adonis was addicted to love with that cutout of Paul Orndorff. And speaking of being addicted to love, that is the song you hear underneath us here tonight, of course, by Robert Palmer, because that was, I believe, the number one song in the nation the week of this show, and that, as always, transitions us into Mr. Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner. So, Scott, why don't you take it away?
Thank you, JR, and indeed it was, or Hulk Hogan addicted to buck washing, which yes, doesn't exist. Yeah, Robert Palmer and Addicted to Love was your number one song for the week, and since this is a Saturday, the newest Billboard chart came out on this day, May 3rd, 1986. So Addicted to Love by Robert Palmer was number one. Number two, the Pet Shop Boys with West End Girls. The East End Boys, West End Girls. Number three, a little girl. Our Man Prince and the Revolution with Kiss. Number four, Greenies Boys, Van Halen, Why Can't This Be Love, fresh off of 5150, the first Van Hagar album. Number five, The Harlem Shuffle by the Rolling Stones, a song I still really don't remember. Number six, first song, JR, for one of yours and my favorites. And she's making her her first Billboard appearance, and that is our girl Janet. Mm. Janet Jack, what have you done for me lately?
It's Jackson, if you're nasty.
We'll get to that soon enough. I don't think that's in 86. That's a little bit later. But What Have You Done For Me Lately is number six. And then another contemporary of R&B and pop, our girl Whitney, Greatest Love of All, at number seven. Your Love by The Outfield at number eight. A song, JR, that at this time you probably heard on the credits of this show, and that is Take Me Home by Phil Collins, which always played, early on before, you know, Jim Johnston decided Vince was tired of paying for all the BMI and ASCAP. But this song was, of course, played during the outro credits of Saturday Night's Main Event. So, and at number 10, always a Manic Monday, JR, from Miss Susanna Hoffs and the Bengals. So
Boomer
there is your
Esiason and the Bengals.
Boomer Esiason and the Bengals. So there you go. There is your number top 10 from the Billboard Hot 100 from May 3rd, 1986. All right, JR, we have got a quiet day, a quiet Friday before May 2nd on the in the theaters. Only three big movies came out the day before May 2nd. All of them made decent money, I suppose. Coming in third, it made $2,273,045, an action film entitled No Retreat, No Surrender. Sounds like a WCF pay-per-view.
Sure does. Martial arts film directed by Corey Yuen in his American directorial debut. Jason Stilwell is a young...
I was about to say American dictatorial debut.
Jason
Stilwell...
Jason Stillwell is a young karate student, Bruce Lee fanatic, who trains in his father Tom's dojo in Sherman Oaks, California. One night after a training session, the dojo is visited by members of the organized crime syndicate looking to take over all the dojos in the country. After refusing to join the organization, Tom's leg is broken by a Soviet martial artist named Ivan Krasinski, one of the boss's hired thugs. The Stillwell family relocates to Seattle, where Jason meets Van Burton and R.J. Madison, who become good friends. And we go on from there.
Van Burton?
Yes. WCF superstar from Seattle.
That's right.
Starring Kurt McKinney as Jason Stillwell. Jean-Claude Van Damme as Ivan Krasinski. J.W. Fales, I believe, was a jobber in 1991. Kathy Salino, Tai Chung Kim, or is it Tai Kim Chung? I'm not sure. Kent Lipham, Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham as Frank Peters. Gloria Marziano, Paul Oswald.
And Josh Richter.
And on and on. Edited by Alan Poon. Good times here.
Oh, God. All right. No buck washing there.
You got negative reviews focusing on a story that many reviewers said was too similar to The Karate Kid. And this year's PTB Christmas play as well.
That's right. That's correct. All right. Number two. This movie made $6,947,000. Another action film entitled Blue City.
All right, let's see. Film, here we go. Directed by my roommate. Oh, no, Michelle Manning. Never mind. It's Mike Manning. Returning to a small Florida town where he grew up, Billy Turner learns that his father has been killed. With a little help from the police, Billy takes matters into his own hands, goes up against a ruthless local mob in a desperate search to find the killer. Starring Judd Nelson, Ali Sheedy, David Caruso, Paul Winfield, Scott Wilson, Anita Morris, Luis Contreras, Hank Stone, Tommy Lister Jr., who, of course, we know belovingly as Zeus. Right. His name Tiny in this. Rex Ryan as Rex. Rex R-Y-O-N, Rex Ryan.
Oh, okay.
Sam Whipple, Rick Hurst, and there you go. The Textones appear in the film, singing their song, You Can Run.
Some of the most enjoyable credits I think you've ever read in the history of the pop culture.
It's because Zeus and Rex Ryan, it's a hell of a movie.
And then, of course, edited by Poon.
This was edited by Ross Albert, so no Poon here.
Yeah, he's no fun. And the number one movie of the weekend, this made $18,034,150, a drama entitled JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling. I think I kind of vaguely remember this movie.
JoJo.
That's right.
JoJo Bones and Daddy House. I'm glad I happened to play that going into the, actually, I think I played it last week. Pryor plays JoJo Dancer. Richard Pryor, that is. A popular stand-up comedian who severely burned himself. Wait, is this a biopic? I guess so. Severely burned himself by freebasing cocaine. The film first came out after Pryor had set himself on fire while freebasing. As Dancer lies hospitalized in a coma, his spiritual alter ego revisits his life from growing up in a brothel as a child to struggling to beat the long odds to become a top-rated comedian. However, his success leads to extensive drug use and womanizing takes its toll on his life. JoJo's spirit watches and attempts to convince his past self to end the cycle of self-destruction. Starring Richard Pryor, Paula Kelly, Billy Eckstein, Carmen McRae, Art Evans, Barbara Williams, Wings Hauser, Michael Ironside. Music by Ironside. Herbie Hancock.
Ironside. Okay. Herbie Hancock. I don't know if we get to that song or if that song already, Rocket by Herbie Hancock. I wonder if that's already passed. If those earlier in the decade? It might have been. Anyway, there's your three movies for
JoJo.
JoJo Dynasty. All right. Let's go to Major League Baseball, JR. It's Saturday, so a full slate of games. Of course, our locals, the Mets beat Cincinnati 4-1. Bob Ojeda now 4-0 on the year. And the yes. Yankees with a 9-4 win at home in the Bronx over Texas. Bob Tewksbury got the win, JR.
That's good. They need the win right now.
Yeah, well, that's true. Rod Scurry with his second save. Let's see who had the big game for the Bombers on this day.
Scurry, was he singing Maggie Mayo when I was out there dealing?
Yes. Wrong Rod. Let's see. Ricky Say had one hit, but he had four runs scored. He walked three times. Willie Randolph had a couple of hits, a couple ribbies. Donnie, 0-for-2 with three RBIs.
So not only does he pitch, he made a living out of playing pool.
That's right. Mike Easler, 0-for-1. Anybody else of note? A bunch of guys had other hits. But it looks like the big day was Ricky Say, who walked three times and scored four runs. So your standings as of May 3rd, both New York teams doing pretty good. Yankees lead the AL East at 15-8. Angels lead the West at 14-10. Mets with the best record in baseball at 15-4, leading the NL East. And the Astros lead the West at 15-7. That's on May the 3rd. Obviously, the other sports are in the playoffs. The Stanley Cup playoffs, there is one game on the schedule, JR. And as a matter of fact, I believe it is the reason, let me just confirm that, why we are do not have a MSG game. Let's take a look here. May 3rd. No. The Rangers. It is game two of the Prince of Wales Conference Final. The Canadiens beat the Rangers 6-2 at the Montreal Forum to take a 2-0 lead in the Wales Conference Finals. So that was the only game in hockey. And we were in the midst of the NBA playoffs, but no games were played on this date. Okay. And that's it, JR. Pretty cut and dry, short and sweet pop culture corner this week. No deaths, no births, nothing of no major news notes. So let's get back to Providence. What do we got?
Just the death of Albert Poons.
Albert Poons.
Was that his first name? I already forgot.
Great job.
There's more Poon. Eddie Poon. We head back to earlier today where Gene met with Hulk Hogan and his buck washer inside the empty Civic Center. They talk about the last Iron Man event, the attack by Bundy, and then review what happened at WrestleMania 2. We get some clips of that. Hogan cuts his usual promo, says he must fight for Hulkamania every day of his life. He says his hit list to Bundy, Heenan, Fuji, and Morocco, and he'll knock them down one at a time. Gene then talks to Ricky Steamboat, says, Steamer, this is a big test for Jake Roberts. Steamer says he's seen too many good men humiliated by Jake and his snake, and he won't tolerate it. We then watch clips of Damian choking out George Wells at WrestleMania 2. Steamboat says Roberts may be the one humiliated and laid out with his own snake across his body tonight. We then head to earlier today again, where Jake and Damian had a pep talk for tonight as well. And that is our next match, Scott. That is Jake the Snake Roberts taking on Ricky Steamboat. And, of course, we'll get right to it. Really smart feud here, I thought. Gets Steamboat right back into something substantial. Gives Jake a chance to establish his value in a low-key feud. I mean, in a key feud. Vince reminds us that Jake is undefeated. Steamboat gets a big pop as always. Vince is confident he'll win tonight. Bobby calls him a pineapple farmer. As Steamboat gets on the apron and waves to the fans, Roberts mows him down with a pair of clotheslines that knock him to the floor. Jake follows out and drops Steamboat on the floor with a sick DDT that legitimately knocks Steamboat out cold. Jake hoists up his lifeless body into the ring, unleashes Damian on his prone body, and the crowd just freaks out. Officials come in and break things up. Not a match, but this was fucking awesome. Establishes Jake as a cold-blooded killer that's out to hurt people, doesn't care about the match, sets the tone for a potential blood feud, and it makes the DDT just look lethal. I mean, he just crushes him with it. Steamboat was clearly just knocked out cold. Tremendous angle, and we'll talk more about this on our next week's show at MSG, kind of, you know, where things go from here, especially with Steamboat's health. But this was a fantastic segment, maybe the best angle we've seen on Sinus Man event so far, at least up there with the Bundy attack from last month. But I love this. I mean, they made Jake look fantastic right away.
Yeah, I mean, you hear like Jake's or Steamboat's forehead just smacking off that cement. I mean, it's
gross.
It's unpleasant. It's not pretty. Was I bummed we didn't have a match? Yeah, would have been nice to see it, but it was a good way to push them that storyline forward and, you know, kind of get you motivated for what's to come from both of them. So disappointing, but I mean, just hearing that cement just, ugh. And it's Alan Poon. Alan Poon. By the way, there were four no retreat, no surrenders. Just let you know. They ended up doing three.
Did he edit them all?
By the way, this picture on Wikipedia of Van Damme's mullet is just ridiculous. Actually, there's no Alan Poon link. That's a bummer. I thought I could click Alan Poon's name and see what else he edited.
He edited a lot of films starring Buck Washer. I could tell you that.
Buck Washer. That's like Bull and Dumb. Buck and Poon. Okay. So there you go. I mean, there was no match. We were not going to have one, but it was just awesome. Jake is a
Buck Washer. Alan Poon. Star in Uncle Elmer's Bucket of Chicken.
Alan Poon editing the pig parts. I mean, it was a crazy. It was a smack. I mean, it was hard.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is just such a great asset that Ricky Steamboat has, JR. That here's a guy who you need to motivate any heel to look like a fucking badass. There you go. Mm-hmm. Put Steamboat with him and have him get cheap shotted, and you get instant heel heat, instant credibility. Not that Jake didn't have it already, but obviously he was doing nothing but squashing guys on our house shows. You were expecting something good out of this, and then he cheap shots and then that's even worse.
No,
so,
I mean, and Steamboat has come from one, you know, hot charged feud right into the next one. Now it's really cool that they've done that with him. They know what they have in him. He's a guy that connects with the fans. He's believable in selling and being vulnerable, and then making the hot, you know, obsessive comeback. So I think it's really cool that they're using him in this role, going from one feud to the next. And already now he's been here a year, and he's starting his second super emotionally charged feud. So it's good stuff.
Right. No, it is. And
that's an all-time classic attack. I mean, that's one of the best.
Yeah. I mean, you hear his forehead slapping the cement at the Providence Civic Center. It's not pretty. It's not pretty at all. So there you go. No contest, and definitely more to come from these two gentlemen.
And it's too, it shows that what they saw in Jake right away to give him a spot like this. I mean, they know how great the DDT looks and how over he is with the snake and everything else. So, I mean, this is this is really smart. So I thought it was well done.
Yep, I agree 100%. No, perfect. Absolutely perfect. So, all right, more to come out of that. And we now, JR, have some promos and interview. Well, actually, before we get to the last match, we have Mean Gene and a special interview.
Yeah, we do. Gene talks to the British Bulldogs, Albano, about their upcoming title defense here tonight. Albano says they're the best gymnastic wrestlers in the world today. And then we see clips from WrestleMania 2's title change. Do you find it interesting that he always references the Bulldog as like gymnasts? I never realized how much they did it. I mean, they constantly are saying that they're gymnastic and whatever. Yeah. That one time Gene said that ridiculous thing. I forgot the fuck he said. It was absurd.
It was something stupid. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, it's also Mean Gene not knowing what the fuck he's talking about. And Alfred and Alfred. Albano probably had a couple of, you know, bumps backstage with everybody else. Probably him and Hogan talking about buck washing. But, it's very strange. I mean, yeah, they're very athletic. But, you know, it's funny that guys like that back then, they didn't have the terminology down about guys like that. You know, you figure right. WWF back in the day were used to the big hosses, and they weren't entirely used to, those kind of guys. So, and that kind of worker. So they just weren't sure as how like to actually say it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. You know, gymnasts. These unbelievable gymnasts.
The best gymnastic wrestlers in the world today. All right, and those gymnasts are defending their tag team titles against the Foreign Legion of Nikolai Volkov and Iron Sheik. Of course, looking to regain their tag team titles that they had been without since June of 1985. Dynamite Kid, though, had suffered a knee injury at WrestleMania 2, and that results in the direction that this match goes, as we'll see. And it's amazing to me that he hurt his knee at that match and not, like, broke his head open, because that's what it looked like, was the more vicious shot. So here we go. The Bulldogs defending their titles for the first time on national TV. Big spot for the Legion, earning this big time title match. Here, just when it seemed like they may fade away as a team, Vince says Steamboat suffered a mild concussion and would miss a week of action. This is the best of three falls match as well. Volkov sings the whole anthem to Good Heat, and Vince says Blassie and Sheik are standing there like two idiots. We also hear from Nikolai, Sheik, and Blassie from earlier tonight. Davey and Nikolai open things up as Bobby's very confident in the Legion. Nikolai misses a charge in the corner, and Davey slugs away and then gets a one count on a small package. Davey puts Nikolai down with a shoulder block, but Nikolai catches him on a charge and press slams him across the top rope. Sheik comes in, hits a nice back suplex, and grabs a clutch to win the first fall in quick time. I was surprised by that. Very dominant performance by the challengers. Bobby calls Albano a fat slob as we reset for the second fall. After the break, Nikolai and Sheik are quick tagging, working over Davey with confident strikes. Vince makes a fat joke about Albano. Bobby says he buys his clothes from a garage sale. Sheik plays to the crowd a bit and isn't as aggressive now, but then locks in an abdominal stretch. Davey hip tosses free but misses an elbow drop, allowing the challengers to keep control. Bobby says the champs keep making mistakes, putting them in a hole here. And Vince thinks Dynamite may be hurt because he's not helping at all. Davey gets a sunset flip, but the referee's tied up with Sheik and misses the near fall. The double teaming and quick tags continue with Sheik grabbing a near fall and a gut wrench. Davey blocks a kick and hits an atomic drop for two, but Nikolai tags in and cuts down Davey to keep control. Davey catches Nikolai with a back elbow, but doesn't go for the tag and gets trapped in the corner and worked over. Vince is now convinced that Dynamite's hurt and says this is a really valiant effort for the champs. The Legion keeps clubbing away, getting an assist from Blassie. Nikolai gets two on a slam, but Davey gets his foot on the rope. Nikolai thinks he won and turns to celebrate, but gets rolled up from behind for a three count to even up the match. Vince calls Nikolai an idiot. Really, he's been really mean tonight, but it was really funny. He's like, that idiot! After break, we reset with Davey and Nikolai again. Vince now receives official confirmation that Dynamite has a torn ligament in his left knee, and that's why Davey's not tagging out. The challengers continue to dominate, as Bobby says it's just an excuse and that they're choking here tonight. Sheik turns Davey into a Boston Crab, but Davey gets the ropes to break. Nikolai comes in with a backbreaker and keeps Davey on his knee to pressure the lower back. Davey punches out of a bear hug and then drops Sheik with the running power slam, but Nikolai breaks up the cover. Dynamite tags in and gets leveled by Sheik and carried to the corner to a Nikolai bear hug. Sheik chokes away and gets a gut-wrench suplex and then grabs a camel clutch. Davey comes in, but Nikolai blocks him. Davey fights through it, knocks Sheik out of the hold, and rolls him up for the win and huge pop. Bobby freaks out as Davey was not the legal man. A really fun match with a great story woven in with the commentary, really carrying it, you know, covering for the injury. Mm-hmm. I thought it made the Bulldogs look really strong and valiant as fighting champions. Made the Legion look strong, too, as they were locked in and on point and almost stole the match. The finish was good with the resourceful Bulldogs never panicking and grabbing the win when they had the openings to do so. Good closing to the show. I went 2.5 on this one, Scott. I thought it told a nice story.
I agree. I gave this a 2. Gave it 2 stars, but I loved it. It was a great match. I love watching Sheik and Volkov work together as much as, you know, what an idiot. Vince's a dick tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just it was a good match. And I love watching these four work together. And the Bulldogs are in control. They're in a good groove right now. Fans are into them. They're very gymnastical. But it was just fun to watch a good solid tag match after we got kind of stiffed on the Jake Steamboat match. And just a fun title defense. Speaking of title defenses, are you surprised we saw no Savage tonight?
No. I can't have everyone on every show, so I'm sure he'll be on the next one or whatever. So, and Eva obviously was working elsewhere anyway against Tito, so no, I think it's fine. I think this show is pretty loaded from a match standpoint. I mean, there's really no the past Sunday's main event. Sometimes we've had like that lull match, you know, with a jobber. We didn't have that at all on this card. I mean, this is a pretty robust card, filled with good stuff, and even Elmer Bundy served a purpose. So no, I this is good. I don't think there's really room for anything. There wasn't much time killing either in this one. We really just hummed along.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just curious. But a great tag. I gave it 2 stars. It was solid. Good work. And your tag team champions are awesome. So the British Bulldogs retain their World Wrestling Federation tag team titles, winning 2 falls to 1. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that they lost the first fall quick. It was kind of a good psychological thing for the Foreign Legion.
Yes.
But, of course, the champions win the next 2 falls to win the titles, and we get a little banter from Vince and Bobby as we wrap the show up, and then we're out the door.
That's it, quick and dirty.
So yeah, so there you go.
All right, well, we do our awards.
The awards.
Our match of the night. We'll start things off. There was a lot to like here. I think Hogan and JYD versus the Funks overall was the best match, top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the tag title match was really good, but I'll go with the opener. It was, I mean, big-time star power, a lot of fun. Everybody worked hard. Mm-hmm. So I'll go with that one. Yep.
For sure. The Cousin Junior, I think, is a layup this time, Uncle Elmer versus King Kong Bundy.
Yeah. Nothing to say there.
Our MVP of the night, I went with Jake Roberts of this one, Scott. I thought he made his mark. I think when the show ended, that's who you're thinking about. I think this show alone turned him into a superstar level heel, and he just looked like a cold-blooded killer out there, just, you know, destroying Steamboat and not looking broken up about it in any way, just looking thrilled.
No, I agree.
So I thought he stood out amongst everyone. I thought Hogan looked good. I thought JYD looked good. I thought the Funks looked good. I thought Bundy looked good. The Bulldogs looked good. Even the Legion looked good. Like, I thought a lot of people came out of the show looking strong, Orndorff and Adonis. But I thought Robert stood out among everyone.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was, I mean, he did a hell of a job putting over that feud and putting over, you know, Steamboat as sympathetic, which is obviously a tone for Steamboat over the next couple of years, and crazy heel heat. So big MVP spot for Jake.
All right, the Gator Wolf Award for the worst wrestler on the evening. I believe
I don't think to go any further.
Uncle Elmer and Scott, even though Kelly's not here, I'm sure he would agree with us because we've talked about it. I am proposing, because he has won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times in his stretch here, and he is now retired and will not be wrestling again, that we award this award to Uncle Elmer going forward.
I say we call it the Pig Parts Award.
Going forward, it shall hereby be the Uncle Elmer Award for the worst wrestler of the night.
Yep.
Good luck unseating him and his giant ass. All right, yes. Best moment, I thought, again, pretty easy, the DDT on the floor.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yep.
Okay. And let's see. Junior Mr. Universe Award for the most roided gentleman of the night. I thought Hogan here. I mean, I know it's tough because the Bulldog's always big, but I thought Hogan was looking pretty robust here tonight.
The white tights help there because when he wears the white tights, he looks even more tan. And when he looks more tan, he looks more jacked. So I agree with that.
Look at that. All in agreement tonight. Overall grade, Scott, looking back at other Saturday night's main events, the January one, I went with a 6. The March one, which I thought was arguably the best to date, I went 6.5, which was tied with Halloween, and I yet again went 6.5 on this. That's pretty much my max grade right now for Saturday's main event because, again, a show that didn't have like that top tier match, but did have a top tier moment and zero fill. Everything served a purpose. It hummed along. The commentary was really good. Every match had an outcome that made sense. I just a really strong outing for Saturday's main event, and I really enjoyed this show.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 6.5 as well. Fun moments, good crowd, good Providence crowd.
So you have it behind the last one.
You went 7 yes. From March. No, the one in March with Hogan and T and all that. I mean, when Bundy, that one's awesome. That one's awesome. That one's going to be tough to top for a while. But this one came pretty close. But the one in March that set up the big WrestleMania 2 feuds is still one of the best ever for me. But this one was solid. This is a solid. Jake served his purpose. We had a nice hot opener with big time stars, good tag title match. I like the sit down with Gene and Hogan in the empty arena. It was a good episode. A lot of fun. Not as good as the March one, but pretty close. So I give it 6.5 as well.
And we're rolling. I mean, all the 86 ones so far have been really good. We haven't really had any duds, so it's been a good run of Saturday Night's Main Events. And it'll be a while before we see another one, of course, because they're off for the summer along with Saturday Night Live. So we don't see another one until October. We do have, 5 house shows and another outside event, the big event, in between this and our – so it'll be a while, Scott, before we talk Saturday's Main Events again.
It'll be a while before we get a nice sprint of a podcast.
Yes, so we'll see how that goes. Yep. All right, so PlayStation.com, lots going on. Of course, the Greatest Dirty Wrestler Ever Project, be sure to check that out. Mm-hmm. You can look up info on our Facebook page. If you just search it on PlayStation.com, we've started our podcast and pod blasts and everything else that has to do with it. So check it all out. You can join the discussion on Facebook as part of our group if you want, or you can submit a list without joining the discussion as well. The pod blast will be up and running. Aaron and I did one on Marty Jannetty last week talking about his candidacy. I know Scott, you and Greeny and a few others have canned a bunch of them as well. So those will be coming hot and heavy over the coming weeks as the project continues to roll along. And the pod blast concept will continue. Chad Campbell pretty much owned it out of the gate. Had three or four really good ones over the weekend. One that I really enjoyed was about star ratings. Of course, in the wake of Meltzer breaking his system and going to a 6.25 star. Over the weekend as well, or at least over the past week as well. So be sure to check that out. Subscribe to all of our feeds on iTunes. You can do the Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only feeds. You'll get all the podcasts, all the pod blasts, and each and every other thing else that comes across those feeds. Be sure to leave us a review and star rating as well on there. Shop with us, PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. Be sure to check out the latest episode of Main Event, which dropped this past week, right, Scott?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. We previewed Sunday's show, see if it matched what we probably didn't, but last night's show was a bit bizarre. And, of course, the Godfather Nate and Pete went over some New Japan stuff and some other fun overseas topics. So check it out. Good episode.
Indeed. What else we got going on? So that's it. The reaction show should be up as well. Listening to the Money in the Bank Fallout with Chris and the crew. Between the Sheets hit their 100th episode, so congrats to them. I believe that was 8 hours, I think, was the 100th episode. So there you go.
Yes.
On par with the usual. I think that's it. So follow us on Twitter, place2bnation, facebook.com/placetobnation. We will be back next Monday night looking at the May 1986 MSG House Show. Kelly Nelson will be back as usual. So look forward to that. So until then, everyone have a great week. We'll talk to you then. And be sure to join up for the Greatest Dirty Wrestler Ever project if you haven't. Talk to you soon.
I wonder if Buck Washer, the pitcher, had a pig parts restaurant.
That is a good chance that Uncle Elmer ate Buck Washer. That's why we can't find any information.
Exactly.
To the tracks at Christie's.